Hello, and welcome to episode 101 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. This week on the show, I am joined by Jake Miller. Jake is the host of the Educational Duct Tape Podcast, a tech coach out of Ohio, and the Edu Gift Guy. He and I met in person for the first time at ISTE, and I asked him to be on the show. A few months later, we are finally both free and able to line it up. Jake and I talk about his podcast, what it's like being a technology coach, the problems with teachers feeling inadequate and how they are good enough, the importance of reflection and recognizing that sometimes it is your fault, and how important being passionate about your content is. Jake also has a little giveaway for my listeners, so make sure you listen all the way to the end for those details. So, sit back and enjoy episode 101 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Jake Miller. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Streffler. And today, I'm actually really excited. I get to talk to someone who I met out at ISTE, and with us both being busy and scheduling being a problem, it took us a while to line up some time for us both to be available. But we met out at ISTE at the Education Podcasters Meetup, and we got to step away from that for a little bit and enjoy a fresh Philly soda, if you will, out of a place nearby. And so I'm excited to welcome Jake Miller to the show, man. How's it going?
It's going great. I'm honored to be on the show. I've enjoyed listening, and I discovered the show after I met you at ISTE, and you know, you told me about the show, and I went and listened. I was like, dude, this guy's like, sorry, my alarm's going off. This guy's like 80 episodes in, and I wasn't even aware. And I've been listening ever since. And congratulations on triple digits, man. That's exciting.
Thanks. You're actually episode 101.
Nice.
So you just passed that. You're that right after that 100 mark. So,
yes.
as people listen to this, last week I gave my dad the mic, and he interviewed me.
Oh my gosh.
As my 100th episode. So that was interesting. That was fun.
If it was my dad interviewing me, it'd be a hot mess. He'd be like, so what's a podcast, Jake? Tell me about the podcast.
Well, my dad's a former educator, so he's listened to every single episode. He writes me an email every week after he listens, and he gives me comments and notes and thoughts about every episode.
That is
and he's amazing. He's a retired principal now, but he still listens on his bike rides and gives me a weekly email update.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So 100 episodes in, it's been interesting. But you know, you just started season 2 of your show,
correct?
Which we should talk about. But before we get to any of that, let's start with, who are you and what is your space in education?
So my name is Jake, as you said, and I live in Ohio, Kent, Ohio, and I've been in education now for, I think, 17 years. I started off in the classroom. I did 12 years in the classroom, primarily teaching math, but I kind of bounced around from grade levels. I taught mostly math. I taught some science. My last teaching position was teaching STEM. It was a class that all the kids in our school, middle school, took to expose them to computer science and engineering and civil engineering and stuff like that, which I loved. But I kind of, as those years went on, really got bit by the ed tech bug. And so I shifted my perspective to helping educators use technology, which I discovered was my real passion. As much as I love being in the classroom, what I really love doing is helping the educators level up in their use of tech in the classroom. So I've been a tech coach now for 4.5 years. And even as that went on, I found that like just supporting one building worth of teachers wasn't enough. Like I wanted to spread the word more and more and more. So then came Twitter, and then came a website, and now came a podcast, and it just keeps going. And I think that's the most fun. Like if you've found something like a passion where you're like, I'm just going to keep finding new things and trying new things and expanding the new opportunities, like that's just how cool, how fun. And I'm having a blast doing it.
Yeah. And you mentioned the podcast. Like I said, we met at the Education Podcasters Meetup that Chris Nessie put together. Mm-hmm. Your show is the Education Duct Tape Podcast.
Correct. Yeah.
Which I like, as I was writing up my pre-notes, I described it as the most bonkers show I've ever listened to. That also is super informative.
Like, perfect. That is my mission statement right there. The word bonkers is actually in it.
It is appropriate. I mean, you do. I was listening on the way home tonight, I was like, this is basically like if Pee Wee Herman did their own education podcast, is what this sounds like sometimes.
I've never actually done a Pee Wee voice, but I'm not too far from it. Like, it's always in the realm of possibilities that in any given episode, I might hit Pee Wee voice, or I might have a talking couch in the back background like Pee-wee did, or like the mailman might walk in. Who knows? I'm always having fun. That's for sure.
Yeah, I was like getting to the part about sharing other listeners and all the listener feedback, and I was just waiting for you to go mail time.
maybe that'll be in the next episode.
Can you give a little bit of a better description than my ridiculous one of what your podcast is for my audience?
I don't know, Brad. That was pretty spot on. That might be accurate. So educational duct tape kind of started as a metaphor for me like 5 or 6 years ago. And there's a couple stories I tell on the podcast that kind of explain where the metaphor actually comes from. But essentially, it's the thought that educational technology is at its best when we're using it to solve a problem or meet a goal or address a learning standard or accomplish something for our students or have our students create something to show their learning. So the ed tech is the tool doing those things, not the focus of the lesson. So we're not going in the class saying, hey, today we're going to use Flipgrid or Scratch or Pear Deck. Those are wonderful things. We're saying, hey, today we're going to learn this or accomplish this or get better at that. And we're going to use these things in the process. And one of my favorite things about the show is, so it's always me and one other person, and we always talk about two different questions. Like, so today I was doing my interview with John Carrippo from Q, and we talked about two different questions. One was, how could teachers formatively assess their students to inform, you know, next steps in their lesson planning? So that obviously is something where there's 15 different ed tech answers for that and 15 different non-ed tech answers for that. And so it's nice to always have a question where both of us bring different answers to help teachers understand, like, there's no one right answer. You know, there's a whole plethora of them. And the best thing you can do is use what fits your need. And I think the other question John and I talked about was how can teachers, I forget how he worded it because it was his question. It was something like, how can teachers be more effective and make it easier in the process? How can teachers work better, not harder, essentially was his question. And so we're always trying to achieve something, but use technology as the tool, kind of like duct tape. And that's where the name comes from.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's funny that you happened to schedule this week, because I actually have my students doing a duct tape project in class right now, where they're just making something out of duct tape.
Which kids love doing. They love doing that.
They're very excited. I'm making them prototype first, and they don't love that. They just want to get into the duct tape. But
totally.
I'm making them work on it first.
You will go through a lot of duct tape if you don't prototype first. So do they? Out of curiosity, what's the goal? Or are they identifying the goal?
All I told them was that I wanted them to identify a need and create something with duct tape that would fill that need.
I love that. That's cool.
Pretty much the extent of what I asked for from them. So I wanted it to be something more functional than just like a piece of art is kind of the idea I was going for. Yeah. But some of them still found ways around my expectations and found a way to make it say that the art was worthwhile. So, which is totally fine. I'm fine with that. So it's good. One kid, actually, my favorite one today, because I have them doing their pitches in a discussion board on our learning management system. And so one of the kids today, he said first, he's like, oh, I'm going to message my cousin because she makes flowers, really cool flowers out of duct tape all the time. So I'm going to have her send me some ideas and talk to her, and maybe I'll make some really cool flowers. And I said, okay, but why? Like, what's the need? And so he jumps back on the discussion board again, and he goes, my grandmother has been sick recently, and she really loves flowers, and we all give her flowers all the time, but now I'll be able to make her these and give them to her. Like, boom.
That's exactly what
you need to do.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Sick grandma, major points.
Right. Bonus points, sick grandma.
But talking about your show, you know, I love the idea that you talk about. I love the metaphor of the duct tape, because it really does. It, like you said, ed tech is best when it is serving a purpose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wonder, do you struggle to get teachers on a campus to understand that? As an educational technology coach myself, you know, I will often have people come with me and go, I really want to use Flipgrid in my classroom. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, but why?
Right.
Or like, they come to me because they need help with a tool. I'm like, stop like coming to me for tools. Come to me because you need instructional strategies. That's my expertise, is using a tool to enhance an instructional strategy, not technology.
Yeah, that's hard, because these positions, whether you call them like an instructional tech coach or a tech coach or a tech integration specialist or whatever you call it, they're so new to us and they're not familiar to us. And we're like, wait, so are you the tech guy? Like you fix stuff or do you come in and co-teach with me or do you come in and you teach and I sit at my desk? Like how does this work? And so it's hard for educators to understand how it works, and it's not their fault. It's like they're not intelligent. They're just not, they haven't been exposed to it. And so, yeah, I get a lot of that stuff where they want to learn about a specific tool, which gosh, in that case, I normally just take it and run with it because them identifying something they want to do is wonderful. But then there are those other teachers, and this is what really frustrates me, when they almost like see you coming as a tech coach and they're like, nah, I don't want to learn how to use that tool. And they're like, well, I don't want you to learn how to use a certain tool. Like I want to help you do something that helps with a situation you have. Like I want you to identify that lesson that you find really boring and frustrating even for yourself. And I want to help you level up. Or you're having some classroom management problems. I want to help you find a tech tool to help with it. Or you're having problems identifying who's not getting the lessons. I want to help you identify that. So I always try to get them in that mindset, but it's a new thing for them. So it's tough.
Yeah. I always, because I also run our student tech support group. So that's why I have groups. I have students to me because they are student tech support. And, but I always get kids around campus who don't, like who know me and have seen me around, but they're always like, are you the tech guy? And I always just reply the same way. I go, kind of.
Right. Kind of. Yes.
sort of, but not really.
Well, they would come to me and be like, hey, when will my Chromebook be fixed? And I'm like, I don't know how to fix a Chromebook. I'm not the guy that fixes it. And they're like, you're not? what do you do?
That's a wonderful question.
Like, I don't know. I don't really know.
I don't know. But they keep paying me. So whatever right. I'm doing, I must be doing it right.
True story.
It's, you know, like you said, I think it's an interesting point there about the role being new. And one of the ways I've kind of dealt with it in the second. So this is my second school being a technology coach. Mm-hmm. I started at another school where I had been a classroom teacher previously and then got moved into a tech coach role. I felt in that school like I had something to prove. Mm-hmm. And like I was a classroom teacher and I had been kind of new to the school. And then I got this sort of like semi promotion. And so I was like, I would run to whatever anybody needed. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't get my printer to work. I'll be there.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not my job, but I'll be there. Just give me cred, I guess. Give me a reputation that I'm helpful at least. Mm-hmm. And I think I never really was able to fully get out of that because of it. You know, I would move into coaching and doing coaching observations and popping into classrooms and giving feedback and stuff. But I'd walk into a room and the teacher would be like, oh, I'm not using technology today. I'm like, I don't care.
Okay. Yeah.
If it wasn't the right choice today, that's fine. No problem. Right. I might make suggestions for how you could have used it, mm-hmm. but I'm also going to talk about what you chose to do because mm-hmm. it's your classroom, you know, and I am being at this school, the new school starting over and starting fresh. I have been very explicit about what my role is. Mm-hmm. You know, I will, anytime I offer trainings, I go, remember, I'm not the guy that makes things work. I'm the guy that tells you how to use them once they do. Like,
there's another, that's a great way to put it. I love that.
There's another guy that fixes things. Mm-hmm. I tell you what to do with it when it works.
I tell you when to contact the other guy. And then when the other guy fixes it, then I tell you how to use it.
Yep, exactly. Like, that one's that's a tech ticket. Go ahead and just put in a support ticket. He'll help you. It's no problem. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think that has helped. But it still is like it's an odd role, right? Like, it's this weird middle ground. I think coaches in general are middle ground between admin and teachers anyways, in mm-hmm. a lot of cases. And we were kind of talking about that before we recorded, but you know, I think there's always still a middle ground there where you're kind of out of the classroom and mm-hmm. still connected to the classroom. But I think a tech coach is always sort of has this extra foot in the tech side. So it always, I feel like it always complicates things.
Yeah. Well, you're somehow a teacher and like admin junior and a tech, like the tech department all at the same time. And you have to very carefully juggle all of those things. You have to be really deliberate about what you're doing. And sometimes you don't realize what you did wrong until you do it wrong. And you're like, whoa, that didn't work. Because it's like the relationships and the trust between you and the teachers is so, so important. And it's hard to build because your foot is in all of those different spectrums, but also because we're not used to, as humans, as adults, worse yet, as educators, we're not used to like admitting when we could use some help with something, mm-hmm. you know, and we were almost taught like in our schooling, like that's not the way to go. Like the way to go is like, show that you get everything, right? Show that you get it and don't admit the need for help. But that's what a coach is like, what do you need help with? right? And everybody's like, I've got this. And you're like, no, there's got to be something that I could help you with. No, I'm good.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about it that way. I like that.
Yeah.
I guess there has to be, I mean, it takes time. I mean, is that that's horrible lead into anything. This is because I'm a professional. How do you break down those barriers as a coach yourself? Like, how do you get people past the, no, I'm good?
Hey, did you hear that sigh there? That was a sigh because I haven't found the answer yet. And when the person finds the answer, they can write the book on it because I will buy it because it's hard because it's different for everybody. Just like teaching is different for every student, coaching is different for every teacher, and then some, because at least students share some commonalities because they're all students from a similar, you know, geographical location. Teachers just have all kinds of different backgrounds and perspectives, so you really have to come at each situation differently, and trust is the most important thing, and. But sometimes, like you're saying, like for some teachers, fixing that printer for them might be the way you build trust with them. The idea mm-hmm. that they know you're there for them. But then for other teachers, fixing that printer for them puts them, you know, pigeonholes you as the guy who fixes technology. And it's just so hard. You just really, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I have been going through slowly but surely Elena Aguilar. Do you know Elena Aguilar?
Name sounds familiar.
She's at Bright Morning TM, I think, as in Bright Morning Team on Twitter. And she wrote a book, I think it's called The Art of Coaching, and a couple other books. And she has a course on Udemy that I've been going through. I'm not quite finished with it yet. But the way that she talks to educators and helps them identify the things that they need her support with, it is just amazing. And so I've been trying to model the way I do things off of what she does. And what I think is nice of it is she doesn't rush in to identify something to try to, like, a problem to solve or something to fix. She talks the educator through it until the educator identifies something they need her help with, you know, and then they do it. Like, they don't know what they need help with, because, like, she does some coaching, like live coaching videos where she asks the person, like, what can I help you with? And they're like, nothing, I feel like I'm good. And then they, you know, she like asks some questions until they come to a realization where they're like, oh, I guess this could be going better. And then she has an opening for some strategies there. But I feel like in technology, that's hard, because at the beginning of the year, especially when you're maybe starting that new job or new role or just starting up a new school year with your teachers, everything's so high stress and high pressure, and we got to get the tech ready, and we got the computers ready, and we got the laptops ready, and my smart board is not working, and this isn't working, and like, how do I set up my grade book? And you spend the first couple weeks doing that, and you've kind of missed the chance to start building those comfortable, good, trusting relationships. So I don't know the perfect way of how to do it. I wish I did. Like I said, I'll buy the book when it comes out, though.
You know, I like that the talking it through and the really working through. We were having a conversation at my master's program last week about how the difference between mentoring and coaching, right? And a mentor, what I said, my argument was that there's a power dynamic difference. Mm-hmm. You know, my mentee is a brand new teacher who needs basic support. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just need to say, okay, here's what you did. Here's what you should have done. Mm-hmm. Like, and I mean, granted, it's flexible. It's not that direct all the time, but right. in some cases it's, all right, this is what you have to get done today. Like, mm-hmm. this isn't a choice. This is what you have to get done today. Whereas coaching is way more of that guide on the side style where it's, you know, what did you just do? What worked? What didn't work? The discussions to lead the person to making their own realizations.
Right.
And I kind of feel like that's echoed in what you just said.
Yeah. I think you're right, because you could tell that first year teacher, hey, this is what you did wrong, and this is what you need to handle, and this is what you need to get on. You know, you're not their boss, but you're a respected, you know, person that's kind of managing their assimilation of the school. But when you're right there with your equal colleague and you're the coach, you can't do that. You need to help them identify those things, which, obviously, if they identify the things, they're going to be picking the things that they really need help on and the things they're really going to buy into. But it's hard to get them there, to build that trust, to get them there. It's a challenging thing to do.
Yeah, it's not an easy job we choose to do.
No. You
know, sometimes I feel like it'd be easier just to go back to the classroom.
Yeah. I mean, there's just like a different set of challenges, right? Like, you would be spending a whole heck of a lot more time grading papers, you know, yeah. But you wouldn't be spending the time where you're just like puzzling over how to build those relationships, and you're doing all the legwork on the building relationships. It's just a different kind of hard work.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's all like worth that. It though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I love the job. I really, really do. You know, I've talked very openly about my master's program and my doubts about it. And I don't know that I want to become an assistant principal and lose the connections I have as a coach. I as challenging as it is, I like being in that middle ground. I like being the interpreter between teachers and admin. I like being able to speak both languages and translate for people. I enjoy that. I like that part of my job. So I don't know that I want to become an admin, but you know, I'm also putting myself in all this debt to get a master's, so I'll probably do it anyways, but
we got it. You'll never know until you try it out, right?
It's true. Very true. All right, Jake, that's enough about me. Let's move in to talking about my three questions and my questions I ask all my guests. The first question I ask all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
There are so many things that I'm going to cheat on my answer here. So I'm going to tell you what the biggest problems are, and then I'm going to tell you the problems that I'm qualified to answer. Okay. So I think right now in 2019, we can't answer this question without saying, like, look, we just had kids picketing all over the world about climate change. Like, that needs to be addressed. And then there's all these sustainable development goals that people talk about that need to be addressed. And we need to grow students who are prepared to do that stuff. And then we've got a nation that has just all of these equity issues going on right now, where students of race, students of gender, students of different sexual orientation, students from different countries are not receiving what they deserve in all circumstances. And I feel like those are things where I'm not qualified to answer those questions. What I'm qualified to do on those ones is to keep working at it. So like speaking on the equity one, there's a wonderful podcast. I don't know if you've listened from Dr. Sheldon Aikens. Have you listened to his show? It's called Equity Leaders. It's funny that I listened to it and I don't know the name of the show, but it's a wonderful show that always focuses on different things with working for better equity in our classrooms. And it's not just about race. It's about so many different things that we need to work on with it. And so I'm privileged to be a white man grown up in a middle-class white community. And so I'm learning how to handle these problems. And so I'm not qualified to answer those questions, but I'm qualified to keep working on it is what I'm doing. And so I'm going those routes to do it. I think, you know, the problems that I am qualified to answer deal with supporting teachers as a coach, like we were talking about. So one thing that I'm seeing a lot of, and it's been going on for maybe the last decade or so, and gradually increasing throughout it, is teachers feeling inadequate and teachers feeling like maybe they're not doing good enough. Like they're using up all of their time in their day, they're working their tails off, and they're still not quite good enough. They might not be admitting that, but I feel like there are educators out there feeling it. And so what I try to do through my podcast, it's harder in my day-to-day job. That's not true. It's different in my day-to-day job. In my day-to-day job as a coach, I try to, whenever I have the chance to commend them on those things they're doing, you know, those great things that they're doing in their classroom. But in my podcast and things like that, I am trying to tell them, I'm trying to communicate, hey, look, like you don't have to be perfect. And if you're doing your best, you're doing good enough. Like you're giving those kids what they deserve. And if you're reflecting on what you could do better and then taking steps later to improve on that, then you're doing great things for kids. The only problem is if you're either A, not reflecting, or B, you're reflecting and ignoring those things that you're identifying. But there's this quote that we talk about on Educational Duct Tape occasionally from Dr. Maya Angelou, which we spent a whole podcast quoting all the amazing things she said during her lifetime. But my favorite of hers is do the best you can until you know better. And then when you know better, do better. And that's what I try to tell educators through this podcast and through when I'm speaking and things like that is, if you're doing your best, you're good. Like we're proud of you. We're thankful for you. We're grateful for you. And then if you identify what you could do better and then you do it, great. And then you keep, that's a cycle that you just keep going on. So I don't think that's the biggest thing that's affecting education, but I think that's the biggest thing that is in my control. And then the other things I'm working on, like I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to learn about those things too.
You know, it's like practicing what you're preaching in that case. It's like you're recognizing that what you're trying to get teachers to realize is they're not going to be perfect, and that's okay. So long as they're continuing to get better, while you're identifying this is something I'm not great at, but I'm still working at it until I get better at it. And I like that those two things go hand in hand, or I think they go really well together in that sense, because it's practicing, it's modeling what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, I've never really thought about that connection there. That's a good point. You know, I teach, or tech coach, the district that I'm employed at is a very diverse district, at least compared to other districts around here in Ohio. We've got maybe 30% African-American population or Black American population. We've got a decent sized population of students from Muslim backgrounds, students from Asian backgrounds, students from a whole lot of different backgrounds. And I realized when I started working there, like, gosh, this is a situation that's unfamiliar to me. And I don't know what's best to do to support all of these kiddos, except for to care about them and be there for them when I can. But there's more to it than that. And so that's why I'm learning about that. And then I was talking about the stuff with the coaching with Elena Aguilar. I realized when I got into it, like, I know what tech tools to recommend to these teachers. And I know if they tell me their problem is X, I know that the solutions that they could consider are A, B, C, or D. I know how to describe them to them and support them in picking them. But what I didn't know how to do is how to support them as a coach. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm saying, like, hey, I'll do the best I can now. And now that I realize that I need to get better at building those relationships in the coaching, I'm going to go get PD'd up. I'm going to go learn it up, right? I'm going to do this Elena Aguilar course, and I'm going to get better at this. And so that's, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Identify where you can get better and do it, put in the work.
Yeah. You know, you in a recent episode of your show, you were also talking about a quote from Tony something,
because it was
Tony Jackson, two Tonys in the same episode, right? So I couldn't remember which one it was. You're talking about that quote where he says basically, like, he's not going to claim to be the best teacher in the world because he knows he isn't, and he's not going to try to be something he isn't, but he's definitely the best teacher he's ever been. And I thought that was such a cool way to look at sort of that same thing of, like, constantly recognizing what you need to do to improve. And even if it's incremental and slow change, I think if we're all doing better than we did yesterday, that's the right direction, right? Yep. I mean, that's where we need to be headed.
Absolutely. And I want teachers to hear that's good. That is good enough. You are good enough. If you are going, this is the best I could do now, and this is where I can get better, and I'm going to get better at it, then you're doing good enough. That's what we need from you. That's what kids need from you. That quote from Tony, and for people that are furiously Googling that right now, it's Tony, T-O-N-E-Y, Jackson, and he's at he rhymes with me on Twitter. But I saw Tony at ISTE as well. Also at the Flipgrid Live event, he spoke there, and I was like, I got to look this guy up. And I got to start following him. But in that particular talk, he said that part that you said about he's not the best teacher ever. He's the best teacher he's ever been. But then it ends with, or at least that part of the speech ends with, I'm going to put in the work to get better, not to get perfect, but because it's worth it. And I just, like, that's my mindset right there. Like, I'm not trying to become perfect because I know I won't be. I'm doing this work to get, you know, because I know it's worth it. I know it's worth it for the kids. I know it's worth it for the educators I work with. I'm doing it because it's worth it.
I think I wonder if there's a connection there between the being worth it, and more specifically the kids, and this sort of constant feeling of inadequacy. Like, another discussion I was having with somebody, we're talking about wanting to make change and trying innovative ideas and doing different things. And the problems with that are that no legislation will allow us 3 years to try something new. And in some ways, maybe they shouldn't, because we can't ruin 3 years of a group of children's education.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's too much to throw away.
Right.
So it's like somebody else explained it to me. They said, you know, the problem with our job is that you could spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year working on this job, and there would still be something more you could do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, the mental health of teachers, you know, that's something that I worry about for educators, is that no matter how hard we work, we could still do better. And we need to find, we need to find the point where we stop, where we relax and realize that taking care of ourselves actually helps make us better too. You know, like being happy and productive and confident helps to not just the continued hard work on it. I like what you said there about you know, the, you know, trying something new for 3 years and seeing if it works. Like we can't do that to kids. We can't put kids through that. But I think that on a smaller scale, we can do things like that. Like I could walk into a classroom tomorrow and try out a lesson format or a tech tool or a project that I've never tried before, and it could fall on its face. And the kids could benefit from seeing that happen and seeing how I react to that and hearing me talk them through what just happened and reflect on it. But that's only okay on the small scale, right? Only if it's a couple of days or a couple hours or whatever, not if it's, like you said, 3 years. Like, we just can't do that.
Yeah, it's, and that's the, that was, that that's absolutely, we want to encourage that growth mindset in our teachers. If you look at it that way of like, failure is okay, and then talk them through why you failed. I love that part of it, especially is when you talk kids through, okay, that didn't work. Here's why. Right. Here's what I thought was going to happen. Right. Here's what really happened. You know, I think that part is really a critical learning experience for kids. But to throw away 3 years to try some kind of drastic change to our model on the whole, right? Mm-hmm. Like our structures have been more or less unchanged for a long time in this country. But to drastically change anything like that, while we know this current system is not producing the best possible result, generally speaking, it's producing a good result.
Oh, yeah.
So we can't very well say burn it all to the ground and see what rises from the ashes. Even right. though I regularly say I want to burn education to the ground and see what rises from the ashes.
Yeah.
We also can't do that. It's not, it wouldn't be fair to the kids.
Right. Well, and there's a little bit of throwing the baby out with the bathwater too. Like you, like there are some really good things. There are some really fantastic, you know, things that educators are doing with their students and the relationships they're building with their students and the things they have their students doing. Like you were talking about this duct tape project where they're essentially going through the engineering design process or design thinking to make something. Like that's fantastic. You know, we don't want to burn that to the ground, but there are some other things that, that maybe they do deserve that. But I think the other, like when you were first saying that part about, you know, maybe the reason that educators sometimes feel inadequate is because of these things that we can't try these new things. The direction I thought you were going, and then you pivoted and went a different way on me. I thought you were going to say, because we're measuring the wrong things, right? We like the more work we put in and do these new things, and yet we're still measuring the old things.
Yes, right? That is certainly true. You know, and it's... obviously I feel like we could spend a whole hour talking about what we're measuring right. and why, right. but yes, I think certainly until we fix some of those measures and measurement systems, we're not addressing the right things.
Right. Well, I think what you, I've heard this somewhere before and I don't know who to quote on. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Who knows what you're measuring indirectly communicates what you prioritize. And so we are communicating to the rest of our you know, other people in our profession, as well as the public, as well as our students, what we prioritize. And a lot of us are like, wait a minute, whoa, we don't prioritize that stuff, those test scores and things like that that we're measuring, and the value added and yearly growth and all the and state report cards. I know it's different states, but these actually aren't the things we prioritize, yet the fact that we measure them makes them the things we prioritize.
Yeah. Well, and they become the news piece. They become the face. They become the brand, right?
Yeah. Like
they become all those things we definitely don't want them to be because it's easy for an anchor to say, oh, look, this school went up 2 points or down right. 5 points or whatever
yeah.
you know, the case may be. It's easy for that to become a Facebook post. And it's not nearly as simple to say, look at these kids randomly playing with duct tape and doing what appears to be wasting time
right.
and go, no. You don't understand all of the stuff that's going on to let them play with duct tape.
Right.
Like there's, you know, but yeah, I agree. I think you're right.
Right. There's no measurement for if those kids then after the fact of doing that project in your class, if they become more innovative and better problem solvers and better problem identifiers and more equipped to work in a 21st, we got something 21st century, we're in it, but a 21st century job, I don't know what else to call it. If they become more equipped for that, we don't have a measurement to prove that until 10 years later or whatever, when they're in their job and they're like, oh, hey, like it turns out I am pretty good at this, but we don't have a measurement in place now to confirm that.
Very true.
Not that I know the answer to how to do that either.
Oh yeah. Let's just leave this whole segment with just a lot of questions.
Like
just, we solved absolutely nothing, but we had fun doing it. So, you
know what, cool. in the show notes, just put that emoji of the guy going, you know, with the hand on his chin, just add in the guy.
I like it. Cool. Well, like I said, didn't solve anything, but it was a lot of fun. And I think we had some good talk in there. I think it's good.
Yeah.
Let's move on to my second question. My second question for all my guests is, what is something that you are doing that you wish all educators would do?
You know, one thing that I think kind of revolutionized the way I do things in my classroom, the phrase for this came after when I started doing it, actually. But back when I was in my STEM classroom teaching STEM, I had kind of an aha moment when I had this really, really difficult class. Like behaviorally, they were really difficult. And I felt like it was a STEM class. We were coding, we were making games, we were solving engineering design problems, we were doing things with duct tape. And yet I was having such behavior problems with this group of kids. And at first, like, I went through like the 7 stages of the bad class, where I was like blaming the guidance counselor, blaming the parents, blaming the water. I don't know like what else to blame. And what finally became like the kind of the climax of the situation was, I kind of reflected on who the kids were that I was having difficulties with in class. And I realized that they were either the kids who were able to move faster than my teaching pace and were bored, or the kids who were not able to keep up with my teaching pace and they were frustrated. And so they just acted out. But those like Goldilocks kids, I call them, the kids right in the middle who I was teaching at the perfect pace for them, they were behaving perfectly. So I realized that I was part of the problem there. And that reflection led me to change the way I did things in my class. And my class became student paced. And I've talked on the podcast about how I developed that, and how my students, how I use technology to kind of lead my students through the pace of the course. And that reflection really revitalized, like it fixed that class. And like every other class, I never had that problem again, like because the struggling students or the slow processors were able to move comfortably at their own rate, and the fast moving students or the fast processors, whatever you want to call them, they were able to move forward and keep challenging themselves. And I'm not gonna say I had no behavior problems, but it really cut out a lot of them, because they were able to keep doing work. They were able to keep engaged in what they were doing, and they didn't have to create new engagement by talking to the people around them. But what I heard, it's been about a year and a half ago, I saw a guy named Tim Kite speak, Kite, K-I-G-H-T, and he talked about this equation, which he's not the originator of it, but he seems to be the main person that talks about it nowadays. It is E plus R equals O. And the E stands for the event, R stands for your response, and O stands for the outcome. So there are two things. There's one thing that you can't control, and that's the event that you're given. I can't control which kids were in my classroom. There's one thing that you can kind of indirectly control, and that's the outcome. That's, you know, I wanted all of those kids to behave and yet be happy and learn and achieve their best in the class. So the only thing that I could truly, truly control was my response. So I had to find a response that, when I added it to that event, got me to the outcome I wanted. In that situation, it worked out. But then, you know, what I found out through more reflection was that, I had new problems, right? Like I had built other problems by doing it the way I was doing it. And so then I had to take another step to fix that. And I went, oh, this could be better. And then I would take another step. But I kept doing that reflection, kept thinking about what the event was, and kept thinking about what my outcome was, and then saying, what do I need to do? What response do I need? I wasn't saying it then, because I didn't know that equation then. But what response do I need to add to this event to get to the outcome I want? So I think educators, because we're so busy and we've got so much going on, we're not often truly reflecting on what we're doing and identifying what change we need to make to get to our goal outcome. I think some educators do it and do it wonderfully, but I think others, it's just like on to the next task. Like the lesson ends, it's on to grading the papers. The papers are done, it's on to planning the next lesson. I don't blame them, because we're busy. But I think the reflection piece is key. It's key.
Yeah. And I think the critical thing I take out of that is the idea that you're not only reflecting, but reflecting and allowing something to be your fault.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's, like you said, it's so easy as an educator to say, well, I can only control them for the 1 hour they're in my room. Mm-hmm. Their parents are the one that didn't raise them right.
Yeah.
Or it's their background. It's their you know, their family, it's the free and reduced lunch kids. Yeah. It's the bottom 25. It's the guidance counselor stacked these classes. By the way, I don't believe for a second that a single guidance counselor in the entire country has ever actually stacked a class against
right,
somebody.
Right.
Just for the record, I've seen how hard it is to make master schedules. I don't think anybody's ever actually done that. Amount of work that would have to go into making that happen.
It would make it harder. Yes.
Like, that wouldn't make anything better for anyone involved.
But it's in that situation, I was like, what did I do to these people? Like, what did I do to them?
Oh, I've had the same thought. Right. Absolutely. Like, what did I do? Why did they do this to me?
Did I take their parking spot? What happened?
But I think it is so much. And like you said, we're busy. So it's a lot quicker and it's a lot easier to just say, oh, it's not my fault. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, it's this, that, or the other, and that's out of my control.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think thinking about that equation you're talking about, that it's shifting where that event is, mm-hmm. right? So if the event is the constant, the one thing you can't control, right? Then that is, we have to shift what that is. So instead of saying the event is these kids have bad parents, it's the event is these are the kids I have.
Right.
Now what can I do?
Right. Because
I can't fix bad parents. There's nothing I can do about that. So even if that's true, I still can't fix that.
Right.
So let's address the thing I can fix, and it can be my reaction to it, my response to what the group of kids in front of me is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just the differentiation component you're talking about, recognizing that students are moving at different paces and everything else. I don't think I had more than a handful of teachers in my educational experience who ever did that for me.
No, I didn't have any.
I mean, that's probably being generous. I can think of maybe one or two.
Yeah.
But even then, they were probably teachers who just had styles that connected better with me mm-hmm. than the rest of my classmates, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's something that is tremendously hard to do, but is so unbelievably critical to really recognize that you have kids at every level in every room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it actually starts off a lot harder to do it that way, but it ends up becoming a lot easier to do it that way because you end up in a situation where you have less problems in your classroom because you're doing these things, and it enables you to build better relationships with the students in your room too, because it's giving you more flexibility and you create a stronger trust, I think, with the students too, because they feel like you truly understand them, you know, and you're giving them the opportunity to move at their pace. You get less pushback from the students because they're feeling comfortable with what opportunity you're giving them. So it is more work maybe up front, but I think it takes away work later. I don't know what the metaphor for it is. Like for example, my dad, this is a little bit of a loose metaphor, but my dad can fix anything in the world that he wants to fix. Like seriously, like he'll fix anything in his house, but before he fixes it, he'll spend 10 hours thinking about it upside down, backwards, and sideways. Like he will think about that problem in so many different ways. He'll like text me some ideas for the solutions of how he's going to do it. And I'll be like, Dad, I don't care. Just go ahead and just like fix your thing. Like, I don't want to talk about it, but that's how he goes through it. And then when he does it efficiently, he does it correctly, and he gets it done and it makes it work. So he puts in a lot more work up front, but the work that he ends up doing in the long run that ends up being more efficient and effective. And so I think in this situation, it's kind of the same thing.
Measure cut twice once.
Yeah, totally.
I like that. Yeah, I think that's good. I think reflection is critical for all of us, and recognizing that sometimes it is something we're doing that is a contributing to the problem are both critical components there.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it. Question two is in the books. We got one more to go. Question number three for all my guests is who is the greatest teacher you've ever had?
You know, I think one teacher that kind of stands out for me from my education years, her name was Mrs. Dolsack, and I'm friends with her on Facebook, so I'm gonna have to send her the link to this message. and I can't remember much about the way Mrs. Dolsack taught. She was my math teacher throughout like junior high and some high school years because I was in a pretty small school district. But I what I remember about her is she loved math. She had a passion and excitement for math. Every day that I was in her room, I could tell like this lady is psyched about these two-step equations. Like she is into it. And it was contagious because she was. But then also like truthfully, I don't know that I'd be in education if it weren't for her, because she, as I was like a ninth grader or something like that, she gave me the opportunity during a free period to go down to our elementary school, which was a couple blocks down the road. And I would walk down there and I would tutor some struggling math students, like some third or fourth graders who were struggling at math. But she identified in me that I had this excitement and that maybe I would be interested in helping younger students. And she gave me this opportunity to do it just because she connected with me, you know, and that kind of like it lit up something in my life where I was like, yeah, I really do like working with younger kids and teaching them. And I remember there were two or three other students who did that with me. You know, we'd walk down all together and we'd each have our students we worked with and they enjoyed it too, but I don't think they became educators. And that's not to say that it didn't work. That's to say that like she was giving us an opportunity based on a connection she made with us. You know, she didn't invite the whole class. She didn't invite all of the A students. She invited all of the students who had an excitement about what they were doing with math because she shared that excitement and she gave us an opportunity to share ours back, you know, and connect over that. And she kind of identified us as people that might want to do that. And I think it really affected me. But like I said, I can't remember. For all I know, she wasn't even a great teacher. I think she was a great teacher. But I think that what I liked about her was these connections. That's what I remember from her, is that she was excited. She gave me this opportunity. She connected with me. We kind of bonded over this excitement for math. But when I was confused about something, I'm not sure if she was really good at explaining it to me. She probably was, but that's not what mattered to me. And that we hear those like platitudes about education, you know, about you know, the students want teachers that care about them and connect with them and show that they're excited. But truly, like that's the teacher that I came to when you asked that question.
101 episodes in to my show, and I've asked that question every time, and I think there's only been one time mm-hmm. where someone has actually talked about the ability of a teacher to actually teach them something.
Yeah, I believe it.
In terms of content knowledge, mm-hmm. it's always back to they connected, they saw me, they recognized me, they treated me fairly, they made me feel loved, or whatever that yeah. difference may be. It's always that part of it that makes you a memorable teacher.
Yeah.
And going back to your first point of feeling inadequate, we don't feel inadequate because we're not connecting to kids, right? Like we typically feel inadequate because our lessons aren't good enough, or we're not hitting all our standards, mm-hmm. or our test scores aren't where they need to be. You know, it's what are we valuing and how are we showing that's what we value?
Right.
And if making those connections is what we value, we need to demonstrate that.
Right. Right. And because we're not measuring it, people don't realize that we're not prioritizing those things. So I think that that's kind of on the educator community within a school building or whatever it is. It might be an administrator, it might be a coach, it might be a leader, it might be, I don't know who it might be, needs to say like, look, this is what we care about. Like, this is what we truly, truly prioritize, or these relationships, or these like innovation, like you were talking about the duct tape project. Like, what are those things we have to tell each other, or somebody has to tell us like, hey, I give you permission to prioritize these things, not your test scores. You know,
I like it. What a great place to wrap this thing up with.
Yeah,
I like it. I like it. Well, Jake, I really appreciate your time, man. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed our talk. I think there's some really good stuff in here. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah.
If my audience would like to reach out to you, and I know you had some stuff you wanted to share as well. Yeah. So give you some space to, where can they find you and what do you got going on?
Yeah. Thanks. Before I dive into that, Brad, thank you so much for having me on. Like I said, you know, I didn't start listening to the show until we met at ISTE, but I've been loving it as I go back and listen to the episodes and hear the conversations. It's just fun hearing people that are, you know, passionate about education and talking about what, you know, what they're doing to make things good for students. So, you know, thanks for having me on. But absolutely. For people to connect with me, I am, my website is jakemiller.net. The podcast is Educational Duct Tape, duct with a T on the end, because that's how a duct and duct tape is spelled. It's tricky, I know, but
Duck brand.
There is a duct tape brand that has the K, but duct tape, it's like Kleenex and tissues, right? But there's also a website for the podcast too, which is edu.ducttape.com. And then on social media, I'm at Jake Miller Tech. That's Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, even though I hate Facebook for that stuff. I'm just so clunky. I'm also on Snapchat as Jake Miller Tech, but I really hate Snapchat. It is just so confusing. I just don't get it.
I love Snapchat personally. I don't use it for the podcast or anything, but personally, I just love Snapchat.
Gosh, I must need to mess with it more. But the other thing I wanted to share too, as you alluded to there, is I do one of the things that I've, so talking about educational technology and how to help teachers get better in their classrooms through the use of educational technology based on what they identify in their classrooms. That's my passion, right? And that's where educational duct tape comes from. But my hobby, let's say, is spreadsheets. I don't know why, but I am such a spreadsheet nerd. I love a good spreadsheet. I love a good spreadsheet formula. When I learn something new about a spreadsheet, I just geek out about it. Like, that is the nerdiest thing that somebody's ever said right there. My hobby is spreadsheets. Like, that literally, that should be on a t-shirt that I wear around. People make fun of
me. I would wear that shirt. I spend a significant amount of time on spreadsheets.
Geeking out about them too, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
That's the way to do it. But so on the side, I have something I do called GIF a day. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know I make a lot of edu GIFs, I call them, to explain how you do different things with technology. And so in GIF a day, I send out one GIF every day for 28 straight weekdays of how to do something in a spreadsheet. And I say by the end, you'll be a spreadsheet ninja. Well, I've done two cohorts of it. I've got another cohort of it coming up. And I'm thinking about probably November it'll be. But I'd love to give some people and maybe two listeners some free registration in a GIF a day. So if you're interested, go to bit.ly/ in all lowercase letters, Jake Miller giveaway. And I'll pick two listeners to get into GIF a day for free and geek out about Google Sheets with me, because that's one of my favorite things to geek out about. Like I said, passion is ed tech, hobby is spreadsheets. And yes, I'm a huge nerd.
I love it. Well, of course, links to all of this will be in the show notes. You can swipe on over or click the button and see your show notes and be able to view all of that and get all of those links for Jake and where to find him. And honestly, I do highly recommend the Edu Duct Tape podcast. It is so much fun to listen to, and just it is quite entertaining, and also lots of great information in there. And you play games with your guests, and that's just cool.
We do have a good time.
So I appreciate it. So Jake, thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Brad.
Have a great night.
You too.
Jake, thank you so much for joining me on the show. It was a lot of fun to chat, and I look forward to joining you on the Educational Duct Tape podcast sometime. To connect with Jake, you can find him on Twitter at JakeMillerTech and at his website, jakemiller.net. Also, do not miss out on his podcast, the Educational Duct Tape podcast. It is a bonkers show and lots of great info, and you can find it at eduducttape.com. Also, don't forget that if you're interested in Jake's GIF a Day program and would like a chance to get a free registration, fill out his quick survey at bit.ly/JakeMillerGiveaway. And of course, links are in the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter or Instagram at Brad Shuffler. I love to hear from you guys there, and that's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or visit the feedback page on my website that gives you additional options for feedback, which you can find at bradshuffler.com/feedback. Until next week, remember that you are good enough.
Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.